Today is Friday. It's May 13, 2022. This is part two of a Grand Canyon oral history with Barbara Oderstol. Barbara spells her last name O-D-D-E-R-S-T-O-L. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Barbara. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you? It's good to hear you.
Yeah, you too. We're doing fine. Thank you. Barbara, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Absolutely. Yes, please do.
Thank you. In part one, it was a lovely recollections you had about time at the Wasatch Academy. And we were up to 1943. I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about the war rationing. What do you remember about that?
I remember clearly a rationing book. My mother would give it to me, and I would go down to the general store and get whatever meat she was hoping to get that would be available at that time. Tires, anything made out of rubber, were rationed. Gasoline was rationed. Leather was rationed. Sugar was rationed.
Okay.
That's when we got into all of the substitutes for sugar.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Can't remember any clothing of any such type that, well, other than shoes. That's when the vinyl industry came in, I'm quite sure.
Okay. Hey, Barbara,
and,
what do you remember? Excuse me. I'm sorry. What do you remember about the general store? What did it look like? What did it smell like?
It was wonderful. I can still see the front steps with a permanent fixture. She was called Supai Mary, and she sat there, and I guess people gave her coins. I'm not sure. I just remember her sitting on the steps as people came and went.
Did you ever talk to her?
Well, you probably said hello.
Okay.
As you went by.
Okay.
I think when you entered, maybe the soda fountain was there, and Ida Cummings was a fixture on that, married to trail guide Ed Cummings.
What do you remember about Ida?
I can kind of remember what she looked like. Her daughter Jean. Jean Cummings. Yeah. My sister got in touch with many, many years later when Jean married. She married someone by the name of Schick, S-H-I-C-K, I think, and they lived in Sedona.
Okay.
And I had hoped to see her when I was on a trip many, 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 many years later. But at that time, I think she was failing in health.
Mm.
And we canceled any reunion that we might have had, but she was very instrumental in many of the old-timer reunions.
Oh, nice.
And
what could you... I'm going to go back to the store here. What could you get in the store, and what could you not get in the store and would have to go to Flagstaff or Sedona or maybe even Williams to get that the general store didn't have?
All right. There was, when you went in, as I said, the soda fountain was dead ahead. To the right was the grocery area. I can still remember that. I can still remember looking for cans. I know that the butcher was right in front, right to the left, and the canned goods were on back, and bakery goods. On the right side were all of the... can't think of the word, all of the soft goods or hard goods, limited in clothes. I'm sure that you could get shirts. The guys that were living there that were bachelors certainly got their shirts that they wore. You could get boots there. You could probably get a good price on a good pair of boots. There were some notions there. I think you could probably get shampoo, soap, other personal needs, limited clothes. You certainly didn't go there shopping for anything that you wanted to really wear.
Okay.
Probably get pajamas and underwear and men especially, there were men that had to have some place to live, and to the best of my knowledge, all the bachelors that were there, either as bus drivers or as trail guides, lived in the mess hall, which was that cement building near the laundry.
Okay.
And that also had a dining room, had a couple of wonderful chefs, if I recall. It seems to me, and I don't remember the connection, that Sam Bracco, B-R-A-C-C-O, who later was manager of the campground area, had something to do with that dining room, but I can't tell you what.
Okay.
The Bracco kids also went. Sam and Mary also went to Wasatch.
Okay.
Probably after me, yeah.
Do you remember who was running the general store?
Yes. Shirley, last name. Jean Shirley, maybe? Mann? Last name was Shirley. No relation to the Shirley that was part of the Fred Harvey transportation system or the Fred Harvey business.
Okay.
Young man, I have a vague memory of him. And I think his first name might have been Eugene. Gene, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was there for a number of years.
Do you remember how old you were when your mother first gave you some money and a couple items to get at the store?
No, but I'm assuming that I was a preteen at that time. I left home. I left for Wasatch when I was 13.
Right.
So
I'm assuming before then, you know, your mom,
yes.
As a 12-year-old, your mom would have sent you down there, but did she send you down there as a 9-year-old?
I don't know.
Okay.
Also, we were in San Diego for 3 winters.
Oh, right.
When my sister was finishing college. So probably when I got home, I might have been sent down. I really don't know what age.
Okay.
But I remember cutting through the woods, going across the street and cutting through the woods and going straight down to the, coming out at the post office and then walking a few feet over to the store.
Did you get in on some of the sledding activities down Navajo, heading down toward the general store area?
They closed off the road, which is where the doctor used to live, up.
Yes.
The road ended at the garage.
Right.
And along the road also was the schoolhouse.
Yep.
And there was a single home there that the doctor had, and I've forgotten the name of the first doctor that was there. I knew it. No, I can't remember. I remember his wife and my mother were friends. They used to close that road off, and we used that for sledding gloriously. It was wonderful.
Fun.
And that I remember, I have a very early memory of Emery Kolb taking me down seemed to me the hill was to the west of the village. I can't remember what hill there was. Hopi Hill? I'm not sure if that was on the road. It was a long hill. And for some reason, Emery took me down as a young person. And at the time, my sister was dating somebody or other, probably, who had a car. And I was tied on by a rope or by a chain and pulled.
Oh, my.
That was wonderful. Yep.
Hmm.
Pulled behind a car. God knows how much exhaust there was when we took on that. But, oh, yes, we were great outdoors and great sledding people all the time.
At that time, sort of on the general theme of buildings, this is in the early to mid-1940s, during the summer when you were there and during the holiday breaks, was the powerhouse making electricity for the community?
Oh, yeah. That was set up when Elmer Nelson first got there as engineer in the very early days. He was the engineer that I believe might have worked for this, the Santa Fe Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But he was instrumental in getting the infrastructure of the canyon going.
Okay.
And then the Nelson kids were very close friends. In fact, Peggy Nelson, I saw in recent history, within the last 10 years, at her retirement place in Maryland.
Okay.
She also, I think Peggy is, might be godmother for my older son. I think they lived close to where my sister had settled in New York.
Okay.
And I saw Peggy frequently when I finally emigrated and got myself up to New York.
Okay.
And the
there were some
I
was thinking there were some big engines in there. Were they muffled very well, or would you hear them chugging away at times?
You could hear them, but not disturbing.
Okay.
They had a whistle that they blew for the hours of the day.
How so?
I think one went off at 8 o'clock, one went off at 5.
Okay.
And the frightening thing was when the whistle went off for a fire.
Oh.
And that went all over the village.
Okay. Would it go off at noon as well?
I'm trying to remember. All I remember is morning and evening.
Okay.
It might have gone off at noon. I can't remember.
Okay.
Don't know.
Nice. And there was a big smokestack there.
Yep.
On that building.
Yep.
And I'm assuming, given its size, that it wouldn't necessarily have a lot of choking smoke come out of it, but I don't know.
I don't think so.
Uh-huh, okay.
There was nothing that ever inundated the village, no.
Hmm. So I'm assuming that fuel for the engines came up on the train.
Coal.
Coal.
There were coal sheds lining all the way up and down what is now Apache Avenue. There was a shed that was different than the garage that was in the back, and that is where the coal was deposited.
Okay.
Yep.
And were you using the coal to heat your houses?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
At that time, yep. There was a firebox in the kitchen, and my mother had a stove that was everything was cooked in that coal-fired stove, including the hot water heater, which was also in the kitchen. And later on, she got a brand new stove that was a hybrid. It had a coal firebox and also had a what was called then a gas called Flamo. F-L-A-M-O, that fired up gas jets.
Okay.
Excuse my phone. There's a call coming in.
No worries.
Okay. I can remember that kitchen very well. I know where the stove was. I know where the coal basket was. I know where the hot water heater is. I can remember the window and the table and chairs.
Hmm. Okay.
And my mother was a fabulous cook, fabulous baker, and I inherited some of that from her. But learning to bake at 7,200 feet altitude is entirely different than sea level.
Yes.
So one was learned all over again. Yeah.
Nice. And I'm assuming that fresh milk, butter, those things came from the general store.
No. Milk was delivered in a large, I don't know how many gallon can, and I don't know who brought it. I think by train.
Okay.
And my mother distributed the milk. She bottled it, and I guess people bought it from her. I can't remember, but I do remember that huge container of milk sitting in the back area of the kitchen, and mother would bottle it, and I guess people would pick it up, but other than that, I can't remember the details.
Okay.
It came in, but it came in on the train.
So she was the milkwoman?
I guess so.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And then would she, you don't remember whether she went out on early morning rounds or whether people all came to her and exchanged their bottles?
All people came to her.
And then would she have to wash the bottles then?
Probably so. I don't remember that, but I'm sure that she did.
Right. I mean, somebody...
don't know how many people got milk from her. Probably a handful.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember.
Okay.
And I don't know how she started.
Okay.
Or why she started. Or how she contacted somebody to get the milk. I don't know.
Hmm.
No idea.
And what are your early recollections of the laundry?
Only that there were people hired to work at the laundry. And it was, I can't even remember where that building was, but it was right near the powerhouse. And I guess all connected with the mess hall where people ate, and that was a dorm as well. So the laundry had to be right in there as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there was a water treatment place there too.
Yeah, and the water would have come up from Williams on the train.
No. The water came up from Indian Gardens.
Okay.
It was piped up. We were very, very regimented by water. You could take a bath and you could have like 3 inches of water in the tub, something like that.
Okay. So the water coming up from Indian Gardens, I'm assuming, again, the pumps for that would have been at Indian Gardens.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yep. And who was responsible for installing those? I don't know.
Okay.
No idea.
Yeah, and water has always been such a key issue.
Oh, yeah.
For the growth or the restrictions on growth there at the rim. Yeah.
Yep. The only grass was a patch by the Eltavar and the two managers' houses, Nelson and Shirley, that were
okay.
Around the corner from the administration building had lawns. I guess they could water a bit. And whoever lived in those houses then, I guess, was permitted to have a small patch of green grass. I think so.
Do you remember any wildlife coming in and eating that grass?
Not particularly, but the deer roamed at will.
Okay.
There was a buck that we were all afraid of. Several points. I think his name is Smokey. I can remember being warned when walking to school to avoid Smokey, if you can, because he roamed the canyon.
Okay.
I remember there was one doe that traditionally had her twins in our backyard more than once. So as the canyon closed down during the war, and there wasn't that much activity, certainly not much car trouble, then we could hear the coyotes at night.
Oh, wow.
They were closer.
Okay.
And at that time, no one was allowed to have any pets. However, Emery and Blanche Cole did have a dog.
Okay.
So I don't know where that rule came from, whether that was a national park rule, but I do know that there was a stray dog that wandered by our house one time and I guess got friendly, probably, with my sister, and she was heartbroken when he wandered off again.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. What else do you recall about any of the buildings there?
Well, I think I told you this, that the place where the teachers lived is right next door to my house. There was a different style building called the Teacherage.
Okay.
And those Fred Harvey put houses up to replace. I told you what my mother and father first went into, a tent house with a wooden floor.
Right.
Those houses. Then the Harvey put up houses, Harvey in Santa Fe, I guess about 10 years later, because I mean, when I was born and came back, that was the only thing I remember was that house, which still stands. And at about the same time then, I'm gathering that the Park Service put up their houses up too on the other side of town.
Mm-hmm. And the,
I don't know.
The Maswick Lodge had a tent camp. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the name Maswick. What's that?
It's one of the lodges to the west, off away from the rim, where the train would turn around, that piece of train track that broke away and went to the south so that trains could turn around.
That wasn't called Maswick. There's another name for that.
Okay.
And I can't remember what it is.
Okay.
I remember the engineer of the train's daughter was in school with me. And now that you mentioned that there was a turnaround, that brings back a memory, but I have no idea that had a name.
Okay.
None.
Okay.
The only thing that was out in that direction was a bar called Row Well.
Right. Did you get out there in your teens at all?
Oh, I did. I would go. The people that would take me out were my best friends, folks, Millie and Johnny Schmickey. And they liked music, and there was, I guess, a jukebox out there, and we would go out there with them when we were old enough. We went out there as teenagers, not drinking. There was also a bowling alley out there, a duck pin bowling alley.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Schmittke, S-C-H-M-I-T-K-E-E?
No, S-C-H-M-I-D-T-K-E. John Schmittke ran the sales for the trails and buses.
Okay.
Office off the Eltovar lobby. And Millie Weiss was, shall we say, queen of the waitresses. She was, I don't know, she was in charge of the dining room, but she,
okay.
Everybody knew her, and she was very well respected and very much a part of the system.
Hmm. Okay.
At the Eltovar.
Did your folks go with you sometimes to Rawell? Were they, it seemed like there was a group of people who went there, and there was a group of people who kind of hated the place.
No, my father and mother never did, no.
Okay.
Dad was holding on to his Presbyterian ideas of no dancing, no drinking. And there was liquor in the house when people were invited for dinner. I'm sure that somebody had a highball. But other than that, I don't remember it, and there was certainly no wine that was around. Never liquor at meals.
Okay.
Unless there was company. No. Uh-oh.
All right.
And Dad never took me out there. Whenever I went to Rawell, it was with Millie and Johnny.
Okay. And did you dance out there? Did you like to dance?
Oh yeah, at that time, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's.
And they had dances at the Bright Angel too.
What do you remember about those?
Oh, we went constantly to those from the time we knew how to dance, and when I was old enough to start having boyfriends, which kind of happened every summer that I worked, then we always went down to the BA for dancing.
Okay.
And the group was John. John. I remember Sam Fenner and John, who was head of the, I think he was head of the trail guides. I can see him, but I can't remember his last name.
Okay.
There was a combo. I'm sure drums, guitars. I don't think there was a piano. I can't remember. But they played, not every night, but played most of the nights. And I don't think there was dancing in the wintertime. Well, things kind of shut down in the winter anyway.
Right. And you would have been off to Wasatch.
Right, and we danced in one room that kind of emptied out into the patio.
Okay.
Behind the gift shop in the Bright Angel.
Hmm, okay.
Yeah.
And was there some sort of a shuttle service that went out to Rawell and back? Or would you just go down there with friends?
I just went down with friends. If there was a shuttle service, it was something that came after I was there.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Don't know.
That might have been in the 1950s.
I think there was another bar. Matter of fact, a good friend of mine, and we dated for a while. Tommy and Marie Howard. And it was up more up on the rim, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was another place to go. I think there was a bar there, and I think there were also cabins.
Was
that place? I don't remember.
Was that the place that eventually became the Orphan Mine property, and they had a swimming pool up there eventually?
I think so. I had no idea where the swimming pool was. I couldn't even imagine a swimming pool on the rim, but that may have been where it was.
And that was later as well, but that location with the cabins, and a facility for food and drink, that makes sense.
Existed before that.
Yeah.
And the people that owned its last name was Howard.
Okay.
Marie and Tom Howard, and I dated their friend, and he went to Wasatch also. I think his name was Frank, and his name was Bo Howard.
Okay.
I remember going by there after I was married, after I met my husband, he came back from Korea, and we got to the canyon, we drove across the country, but I remember going there and introducing my husband to people, and the Howards were still there.
Okay.
That would have been 1953, 54, I think, yeah.
What year did you graduate from Wasatch?
46. They're all four of the war years, 42 to 46.
Okay. What was your graduation ceremony like?
Well, very small. There were only 46 in my class. At that time, there were fewer than 200 in the entire school.
Okay.
And seems to me that we had the ceremony probably in one of the Mormons called their meeting places, their religious places, wards.
Yep.
And one of the wards was larger than the auditorium, and that's where graduation was held. There were three of us, three very close friends, three girls, who held the honors, valedictorian and salutatorians. And I remember speaking. I was also, the chosen soloist. I sang, and I sang in a quartet and in a sextet, and I did anything that had a solo part. I was the soloist, and I remember singing at graduation, but I can't recall what I sang. It might have been the Lord's Prayer. It might have been something else.
Did you like to sing?
Oh, I did, and I have sung all of my life. Yeah, I
nice. Grew up
about. I did my last solo when I was 72, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No more vocal cords now.
Nice. I'm also thinking during the summer in the evening, would you all kind of get around and sing and do some entertainment on your own, or were you all into the radio? Was the radio entertaining you, or both?
It was radio, and at the time that I was working, many times I worked at the art shop or the Hopi House, and my father also did a promo for Fred Harvey advertising the buses and the trails. He ran a film, and for years, that he showed that film in what was then called the music room in the Alto Bar, which, of course, later on was converted into rooms. I'm sure it was on the first floor, hallway leading out to the porch and the rim.
Oh, interesting.
So
okay.
There. And then he did have license, or did have, I don't know how it is, there were movies at the community house for years that he ran, and they were somewhat current movies. I can remember watching the newsreel of the what was going on in the war. It was a full Saturday afternoon entertainment, but not Saturday afternoon, it was in the evening.
Okay.
A full movie with newsreel, cartoons, and major feature. And we sat on folding chairs in the lower floor of the community building.
Okay.
I think it was a charge, maybe 25 cents, maybe. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yep.
And this is the community building, two-story building, a little south of the powerhouse, up the hill a little bit there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Around the corner from Apache Avenue.
Yeah.
I could cut through the woods to get there. I used to roller skate there.
Oh.
On their outside, their outside porches.
Okay.
Wonderful place to roller skate.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to say something. Any festive things, the PTA always put on a big show raising money, I can remember, and also war effort things, people rolling bandages and getting together there.
Mm.
And dances, no. I don't recall any dances. Any dances were held at the Bright Angel.
Okay.
If there was such a thing. There was a big celebration on Christmas Eve where Santa Claus came. I can remember singing for that for many years. I think I wrote that in my story. Louis Schellbeck's wife used to sing, and then I inherited the position from her. Big, big celebration. Indians and kids and the whole community turned out on Christmas Eve, and they...
Okay.
We dragged, we had a horse-drawn wagon, and they dragged a Yule log around through the village, and then set it on fire, maybe, in the lot across the street from the community building, somewhere in that area,
okay.
I think. Yep. Other than that, there really wasn't that much community entertainment, except in the early days when my folks and all the folks of the original group at the school used to put on plays for themselves.
Okay.
At the schoolhouse, I think. Or maybe at the community building. I don't know. I was too young then.
Hmm.
They made their own entertainment.
Yes.
Yep.
When you graduated in 1946... Were your parents leading up to that saying, when you go to college, you will do XYZ? Or were they saying, if you want to go to college, was a further education beyond high school expected?
Oh, yes, because remember my mother took 3 years of her life and dragged me and my sister to San Diego so she could finish college.
Okay.
So it was expected, yeah. And University of Arizona, had I known then what money was available, I certainly would have researched much more than I did.
Hmm.
Of course, scholarships were not as plentiful then.
Right.
Strange to say, as they are now. But I did apply. I think I had a scholarship in Spanish, maybe something. Not that much, but then, of course, fees were very, very low. And I did stay. I did join a sorority and did stay in a sorority house while I was there.
And this is in Tucson?
Yep, yep.
Okay. What was your major?
Education.
Okay.
With either, I think, possibly an English minor and a music minor for a while, until I discovered that something that grew on the campus was giving me sinus infections, and I stopped formal voice lessons at that time.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking 1946, college opportunities for women would have been severely limited to teaching, nursing.
Secretary,
yep.
And that was it, yep.
Maybe botanist if you really wanted to be out there.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all the men were coming back. We had the GI loan and we were inundated with men.
Okay.
Coming back out of the service too. Tremendous influx of GI.
Okay.
Bill people, yeah.
What do you remember of the University of Arizona in 1946? Your first take on the campus?
I lived in one of the major freshman dorms, Maricopa it was called, and don't remember much about it other than classes. The only building that was air conditioned was the library.
Okay.
I remember Old Main very fondly.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in the dorm for a year. Corresponded with that roommate for many, many years. We had a birthday back-to-back. I didn't hear from her this year. I don't know whether she's still alive or not.
Mm.
We lived in Maricopa, and then I pledged my sorority the next year and moved there. We were on Cherry Street. North Cherry Street, I think it was. Yeah. I remember Old Main. I remember classrooms. There was nothing of the... there was no student union building at that time. The only student union area was in the basement or parts of Old Main.
Okay.
And there was a coffee shop there. You could get a brief breakfast there, I think. I remember the fountain. Anybody who got pinned, got a fraternity pin, was thrown in the fountain. That area, which is now a reunion place and a reunion site, was just all desert and led out to the women's gym and swimming area. There was nothing there. I think they had just begun to think about putting up a, what's the name of it, where graduates can go, a building. I think I've seen pictures of it off to one side, but there was nothing there. But in fact, I was in that building when I went back for my 50th.
Okay.
Well, it kind of supplanted the Old Main as a hangout for people.
Okay.
And it was off to the north side of that stretch of road and desert area, which I think is now filled in.
Okay. Yeah.
And there were class buildings across the on the other side of the street, I think, leading down to Bear Down Gym and the women's gym. That whole stretch now, I guess, is filled in. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would assume so. Okay. And did you get up to the Catalinas at all? Did you get out into the deserts and the surrounding mountains around Tucson?
We did. We went up to Sabino Canyon on beer bus, which supposedly were illegal, but I think they were also down in the dean's book. I guess maybe she looked the other way. I don't
okay.
know. There were bridges going across the Sabino Stream.
Right.
And what I remember is each each fraternity had marked it as its own bridge.
Oh.
Where they would go for a beer bust. And I remember one time being out there, and the group I was with, we got stranded. Somebody had a flat tire. We came into Tucson on the rim of a car.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yes, wonderful teenage.
Fun. Did you meet your husband there, or was that later?
No. I went to New York to visit my sister after I graduated, and husband was still at West Point. He was in his senior year at West Point, and I met him there through friends.
Okay. What year did you graduate from the U of A?
46. No, 50.
Okay.
Straight through, yeah. 46 in high school and 50 in college, yeah.
By this time, when you went into college in 1946, what was Ruth doing at the time?
She married the ranger.
Right.
She got married in 1942, and he was out of the service by then. He was a pilot, and his plane had crashed in Florida, they think was probably sabotage at the time. So
okay.
he got out of the service, and they moved to New York, where his family was, and her husband went into business in his father's business. And so they lived in Westchester County then.
Okay.
From that time on.
So when you graduated in 1950, did you then head out to see Ruth in New York?
Yeah. I decided to go. I worked at the Canyon to get money, and my mother didn't drive. My father was more than generous. Let me take his brand new Pontiac.
Whoa.
And I drove across country with my mother.
Wow.
All the way to New York, and fell in love with New York City. I had never seen the bright lights and the
what did it look like for you? I mean, you grew up at the south rim of Grand Canyon. New York City must have been just a different world.
It was. I fell in love with it. Just fell in love with it, yeah. And I decided I had a job, I guess in Flagstaff, if I wanted. And somebody said, well, why didn't I stay there? So I inquired around, got a couple of interviews, and found a job as an assistant teacher. Didn't have a car. Had all kind. I lived with my sister and her husband. Her kids were little then.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve was born soon, not too long after I got there. Then I moved out and was able to walk to my job for a while, but met...
Had Ronnie already been born by then?
Oh, yeah. She was 4 or 5.
Okay.
Steve was born this fall of the... and I got married the following January. So I met my husband in... Let me see. He graduated... I met him in 51. So Steve was born in 51.
Okay. What was your husband's name?
Tom Otisol. He was from New Orleans. And so I met him through friends. One of the friends happened to be from Grand Canyon, Emily Sheck. We were close friends of my mother. She was widowed during the war, and she moved home to Philadelphia. And then she and my sister became even better friends, and she used to go up to take the train from Philadelphia up to where my sister lived and spend weekends. And through her, she knew a young officer and his wife who was a professor at the Point. That's how I met my husband. I met through this instructor at West Point.
Okay. He was from New Orleans?
Yeah.
What was his family doing there?
His father was Norwegian, and his mother was a native Louisianan.
Okay.
And after the war, after he had fought in the First World War and the Second World War, they settled in New Orleans because that's where her family was, or what was left of her family. So She was opposed to my marrying a Catholic and said she wouldn't go to the wedding if it was at a church.
Wait, hang on. So Tom's mother was opposed to marrying your mother. Okay.
My mother was opposed to my marrying a Catholic.
Ah.
So she would not go if we were married in a church. So we had to get a special dispensation from then with one of the big gurus in the church, Cardinal Spellman, who was widely known in the New York area for all kinds of things, plus being a superb speaker. And we got a special dispensation from him, and we were married in my sister's home.
Oh, my. In Ruth's house.
So, in her house, right. So we had the chaplain, the Catholic chaplain from West Point. Her house was only 40 minutes from West Point.
Okay.
Where they lived. And so we had the chaplain from West Point marry us in my sister's home. Yeah.
Nice. What do you remember? Do you remember what day or month or year that was in 1951?
It was January 52.
January 52.
Yeah. And it was a military wedding. His father was in Coast Guard uniform. Ruth's husband put on his old Air Force uniform. A couple of friends of my husband's came down in their cadet uniforms, and we had the traditional archway of swords as we left the house.
Wow.
The whole thing was in the house, and strangely enough, Emery's grandson, Sonny Leonard, was stationed in a basic camp in New Jersey, and I was able to get in touch with him, and he had a nice singing voice, and he was the soloist at my wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
What attracted you to Tom?
Oh, I don't know. He had the qualities of my husband, my father.
Okay.
Of complete honesty, complete integrity, which of course they all did, and complete following a path that was logical for him, and small family. He had one sister, a year younger. I had one sister. We both had, my mother was Scandinavian. She was half Norwegian, half Danish. So that was a common factor.
Yes.
With his father being Norwegian.
Yeah.
So it was a very glamorous time at West Point when all young women along the eastern seaboard either went to Annapolis for a weekend or went to West Point. It was part of your young womanhood.
Huh. Okay.
And, there were dorm rooms at the big hotel, and you could go there and stay for the weekend, $2 a night, I think it was. And I'm sure that Annapolis had the same kind of accommodations.
Okay.
This is very soon after World War II, so things were still very definitely military.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. And
where did you go for your honeymoon?
A wonderful ski place in Pennsylvania called Skytop.
Okay. Had Tom...
There was still,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There was still a lot of glamour to the military, even though it was serious.
Okay.
About, there are the balls, or we call them hops, were a wonderful, wonderful social thing at West Point. I'm assuming Annapolis also. And I think that those have not continued like they used to. I think today's generation is missing a lot of the romance that went on in those days. But then, of course, that was wartime, too.
Yeah.
The end of the Second World War, the beginning of a Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband got his orders for Korea soon after we got back from our honeymoon, literally. And we were married in January 1952. he went to Korea that May and stayed there exactly 1 year on the front lines the whole time. So he came home by a point system very quickly.
Okay. And what was his rank then in the service?
First lieutenant, and then he got captain and resigned. Several of his classmates were at Fort Bragg right after the Korean War. They were disenchanted by the command that was still there, that was left over from World War II. The business world looked very attractive, much more money. So he did. He resigned his commission and went into business and had a successful career as what was called a sales engineer, dealt with a Department of Defense all over the country in the instrument business that was going up at that time.
Okay.
Those were the days of Texas Instruments and everything else that bloomed from that, including the space shots. And one of his classmates is Buzz Aldrin, who is still alive, believe it or not.
Nice.
So Buzz is the same age I am, and they're out of a class of close to 400 and something, I think. I just read something that there are 60 alive.
Okay.
And they're dying pretty much.
Yeah.
A couple of months.
When Tom spent his year in Korea, where were you?
I taught in Phoenix for a year, and I spent the summer at the canyon.
Okay. What did you teach?
Phoenix.
What did you teach in Phoenix?
I taught a fourth grade.
Okay.
Elementary school in Sunny Slope. I remember that. And I was renting a room from a woman who had taught in one of the Nisei camps in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay. What were your plans then in 52, you and Tom? Was he, before he came back from Korea, was he thinking to career in the military?
Oh, yeah. He was going to go through the whole thing. Yep.
So, big change for him then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was kind of a crowd mentality. There were 16 of him at Fort Bragg, and a great many of those opted to get out. I think it was, as I say, it was crowd mentality. They were disenchanted with the command. They had fought a war. They did what they were supposed to do. And the money looked very attractive, so several resigned at that time.
Okay.
And they were required at that time, I think, was it 5 years? I don't know, 3 or 5 years. Now, like they, today, still in the military academies, when you go, then you have to pay back. I think it's 5 years nowadays.
Okay. So when he came back from the service, and decided to resign his commission, did you guys have any thought about where you wanted to live?
Not really. Nope. Didn't really think about it.
Okay.
We were not accustomed to any one place or the other.
Okay.
We lived in the New York area because that's where business was calling. In the city. He worked for Monsanto Instrument Division for quite some time.
Okay.
And in those days, small companies were being gobbled up by big companies and made bigger, and we went through that.
Yep.
Several times. We moved many times. We moved in business as often as his classmates did because of what was going on in the business world.
Okay. And that, you know, we think of today, the sort of gig economy where you work a little bit for this group, work a little bit for that group.
Yep, same idea.
Okay, okay.
Pretty much the same idea.
So just very flexible. Yeah.
Yep.
And then
yep,
when
I moved.
When did you have your first child?
We had, first child was born at Fort Bragg, 1954.
Okay. What was your child's name?
Her name was Karen.
Okay.
And we lost her to cancer when she was 34.
I'm sorry.
Yep, I think. Yep.
That must have been I'm thinking about your parents at Grand Canyon. Their children have moved away, and they now have families far away.
Yep.
Did your parents ever talk about that? Did they enjoy?
No. I went out to see them when both the two older ones were born, and mother came back. Well, she was with me when first one was born. She came back to Fort Bragg and was there for a month, I guess it was.
Okay.
And then second child was born in New York.
What year?
We had moved, 55. We had moved to Westchester County. We'd moved to Yonkers. And I went to my sister's doctor. That was the only one I knew at the time. And then after that, we moved to northern New Jersey. And a third child was born in Washington. No. We moved to New Jersey. And then we moved to... I can't remember.
What was the name of your second child?
The second child is... Thomas Christian, named after his father.
Okay.
We moved, at one point we moved business-wise again. We were in an apartment in New Jersey, not too far from Summit. We moved to Charlotte. I had the third child while we lived there. Then we moved to Charlotte on business. Then the fourth child was born in Charlotte.
What year did you have your third child, and what was their name?
Third child, she was born in 59. Yeah, I had all of them within 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, she was born in 59. Her name is Berit, B-E-R-I-T, Norwegian name.
Okay. Where did you get that from? Was that from the family?
That was from the family, from my father-in-law.
Okay.
And then the fourth child was born in Charlotte in... 1960, and his name is Eric.
Okay. North Carolina?
Yep. Then we moved back up east again, and we were in the mid-Atlantic from that point on. We were in Long Island, then we were in northern New Jersey, then we were in the Philadelphia area, and landed up in northern New Jersey for 26 years while I taught school. And that's where I retired from there.
Okay. When did your parents leave the Grand Canyon?
I think in the mid-50s.
Okay.
They left after I was married and moved to Phoenix. And my mother was ill shortly after she died of cancer in Phoenix. And is buried at the canyon. And then Dad remarried a girlfriend from Philadelphia from many years before.
Okay.
He needed somebody to take care of him.
Mm.
And they traveled, too. And they had a house at the beach on Ocean City in New Jersey.
Okay.
And that's where he died.
What year?
Oh. I can't get my book right now where the date is.
Okay, no worries. 1960s, 1970s?
He was just shy of 88.
Okay.
So he was born in... whatever that date was, but right now the dates have gone, Tom. I'm sorry.
No worries. No worries. Would you take your kids back to the Grand Canyon for vacations?
No. We were too far away. We were on the East Coast. And they have all gotten there on their own.
Oh, wow.
I took them to the canyon. I took the two older ones, Karen and Chris. In fact, I have one of the classic pictures standing on the rock outside Culp Studio.
Okay.
With them. And so Ruth had one, too, also, with her husband and kids. I took them out to Phoenix. I took them to New Orleans before we moved to Washington area. The Virginia area. Other than that, we drove to New Orleans for one Christmas when they were all, let me think, probably under 9, maybe 8 and under. No, I didn't have a toddler. No, they must have been 10 and under, probably 10 down to 4. And then after that, any travel they've done out there has been on their own as adults. They've all gone, and the most recent was when we met you, when I was there for the symposium,
mm-hmm.
with the youngest, Eric.
Yes.
And he and his wife, I'm sure, I hope they will, and probably their two kids, are determined to make the river trip sometime. I'm almost certain they will.
Nice.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
I hope. I would have loved to have made it, but I was 10 years too late.
Yeah. So raising your children and thinking about your mom raising you at the South Rim, were there some big differences that kind of pop up when you think about that
well, tremendous differences, other than the fact that we had a wonderful childhood. We played constantly. We played we didn't play kickball. We played hide and seek. We played kick the can. We played all the games. We rode bicycles. We roller skated. We did everything outdoors that kids did in those days. There were no romances around because everybody went off to high school.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody around. And when we came back then, people had various jobs. As I said, my first job was with Emery at the studio. Maybe it was before my, I don't know where my sister, my sister was probably, that was older, I guess. She was with her own family. She came out every summer.
Okay.
With her children to see the family. And my older son was also a West Pointer, and he and his buddy did a trip across the country as bachelors the summer that they graduated, and they camped all the way across the country and, of course, got to the canyon. And then he, that same son, took his children, and they did a car trip from Virginia across. I don't know if they got to California. I can't remember. My daughter and family also has been out. And the youngest one was there. You met when we were at the symposium, and his wife, but his kids have not been out. They're the only grandchildren I have that have not been out there.
Okay. All right. Well, gosh, we've been visiting now a little over an hour. Maybe this is a good time to wrap this up. Once we're done here, I want to speak with you about maybe doing another interview. Not quite sure yet. Is there anything else you'd like to add to the material we've just covered?
Not really. except for the fact that my years at Wasatch really formed the person that I was.
Mm.
It was a fabulous education in every way, and I could go into some sides on that, but not right now. I can't remember. Just know that I'm very grateful that I was there at that time of teenage angst and teenage hormones.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good place to be.
Nice. Okay.
And I've been very grateful for it. Yeah. Yep. So.
Nice. Well, with that then, let's go ahead and conclude part two of A Grand Canyon Oral History with Barbara Oderstol. Today is Friday, May 13th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Barbara, thank you so very much.
You are very welcome. Thank you. It's been a wonderful travel back in time for me, too.
Lovely.
I really have enjoyed it.